The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum of Accelerated Government Strategies, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Women of Washington is a series of weekly radio interviews with Washington, D.C.'s most ambitious and influential female executives, role models for the next generation of Washington leaders. Aileen and Gigi interview the most accomplished women in Washington who share their life lessons and secrets to success.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum.
Today we have a special guest, retired Rear Admiral Janice Hamby. Janice is an information technology expert with more than 30 years of experience in the U.S. Navy cybersecurity area. Culminating as a Deputy Chief Information Officer for the U.S. Department of Defense, she is currently the Chancellor of the Information Resource Management College, National Defense University in Washington, D.C.
It is a real pleasure to be here with you, and I am glad that everything worked out so that I could be here.
Jan, tell us a little bit about where you're from and your background. How did a girl from a small town like Medina, is that right?
That's right.
Ohio, decide to serve our country?
Well, to be truthful, the reason I decided to serve our country was pretty self-serving. My mother was a single mom with four kids who would be in college at the same time, and we were basically told to go find scholarship money. And the Navy had a great one, the Navy ROTC scholarship. My intent was that I would go through that for a couple of years, and then I would thank them very much and go about a civilian life. But as it turned out, I absolutely fell in love with the Navy. The experiences that I had in the Reserve Officer Training Corps and the exposure that I got to what a Navy career could be caused me to change my mind and stick with it.
Now, what was your mom's initial reaction when you decided to go that route? Was she supportive of that, or did she say to you, like, oh, I didn't mean that kind of scholarship?
Oh, she was very supportive of it. She liked the idea that a military career might mean job security down the road. And I had been somewhat notorious for being a bit bossy as I was growing up. So being on a track where I could have a commission as an officer and be in charge of people, she thought was a pretty good fit.
So many of our guests do come from small towns and end up, one route or the other in D.C. working for the federal government. So how did being from a small town influence your life growing up?
I think the biggest impact that being from a small town had on me growing up, as well as through my service, was that it really gave me an opportunity to get to know people and to learn the value of being connected with people and to be in relationships with people. It made me much more effective as a leader because I could see people as individuals instead of just a mass of folks that needed to be managed. Instead, they were folks who needed to have a connection to me, a connection to the mission that we were trying to accomplish, and to have a level of realization that they could aspire to be what I was.
Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor of National Defense University. Jan, many of our guests are inspired by people that influenced them early in their life. When we talked earlier, you happened to mention a story about your grandmother. Was she a major influence on you during your formative years?
She definitely was. She lived about 100 miles from where we grew up, so she wasn't a constant present in our life. But she really was present almost every day because of the example that she provided for us and the things that she did with us. She was a principal of a small school in Ashtabula, and she was a single mom who had raised three kids on her own and through her own gumption had managed to provide them with educational opportunities and futures. And she never failed to tell us that we could accomplish anything we wanted to set out to do. One of the things that she did every summer, which I think I give great credit to for my own willingness to explore and be independent, was that every summer she would take us kids. There were five of us, an older sister, some twin brothers who were a few years older than us, and then myself and my twin. And she would take us, my sister individually, my twin brothers, and then my sister and I, for a week or two so that we could have special time as our own selves. She would come down to our home in Medina. She would put us in the back of the car with our stuff. She would hand us a map, and she would say, okay, here we are on the map. Here is where we need to get to. Now you figure out how we're going to go. She started doing this when we were like 5 and 6 years old. And for a trip that should have been about 2 hours, I can remember a few occasions where the trip literally took the entire day because of the different turns and twists and misadventures that we went on. But we always were successful. And so there was a raft of lessons there. Independence, exploration, a willingness to try ideas that may or may not work out, an ability to figure out how to get yourself out of a fix when you realized you were in the wrong place altogether, and the fact that adults would put faith and trust in us as young as we were.
So, Jan, it sounds like you had some great experiences with your grandmother, and most of the guests that we talk to, they look back at positive influences, and then sometimes negative events or influences. You mentioned that your mom was a single mom and your parents, I think, divorced early in life. So did early personal challenges like that divorce change who you are today?
I think that is fair to say, especially because after the divorce, my mother did enter into a relationship and married a man who was, frankly, a pillar of the community on the surface, but he was not a good man. And to the children in the family, without her knowledge, he was pretty emotionally and sometimes physically abusive. So the ability to stand up to him and to live through that and to help each other get through that helped give me an amount of backbone, I think, and a true belief that adversity can shape you for the better. It doesn't always have to be a negative experience.
So if you were talking with a young person today who was in a similar situation, do you have advice that you would give to them that helped you get through those times?
Well, I know that for me, actually standing up to him was transformative. Instead of being the victim, standing up and doing something about it, it took some courage. Actually, perhaps not in the moment. In the moment, it was just a gut reaction, but it changed the dynamic of the relationship and it freed me from that relationship.
So how did you stand up to him?
I literally stood up to him and shouted him down. I was about 13 years old at the time.
That's pretty impressive. You must have been terrified.
Yeah. It also taught me that bullies are bullies, and bullies are actually cowards, and if you stand up to the bully, they will back down. Now, I have to caveat that with some bullies are even worse than others, and it could be a dangerous situation. So I would not advise someone to place themselves in a situation that they thought could be life-threatening. In my case, I was confident that he was all bluster at that point.
Can you think of another time in your life where that experience gave you the confidence or courage to face other tough circumstances maybe later in life?
I can't put my finger on a specific incident, but I can say that when I said it freed me from him, it also freed me from any hesitation to be confident in myself. So I would say it really played out through many different instances where I just wasn't willing to put myself second.
Today, we're speaking with retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor of National Defense University. Coming up, we'll hear about Jan's early days in IT. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor, National Defense University.
Jan, you joined the military and started a career in IT over 30 years ago. What was it like back then being a woman in such a male-dominated organization? I mean, early in the 80s, things were really beginning to change for women. You look at Sandra Day O'Connor was named as a Supreme Court Justice, and Sally Ride was the first astronaut in space. We forget how much things have really changed since then. So What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in the military or in IT?
Conceptually, the biggest change that I have seen is one in attitude. And the attitude I'm talking about is when I first was commissioned, when a woman would show up at a command, the command's assumption was they would have to wait and see if this one was a good one, if they were going to be a good performer. There was not an automatic assumption that you are going to be a good performer until proven otherwise. It was, okay, let's see what we've got here. And that was pervasive. When a man would show up at a command, the assumption was, he's going to be great. Oh, wait, maybe he not so much as time went on. What I see today is that women show up at commands, and the assumption is they're going to be superstars. So there is just an attitudinal change that has absolutely taken place. Now, there have been a lot of mechanical and infrastructure changes as well. So, you know, the opportunity for women to serve on ships, the opportunity for women to serve in combat, all of those changes have made it possible for women to pull their full share of the weight, which is something we always wanted to do. And it takes away any of the kind of negative thoughts that others may have held on to because women weren't pulling their own weight. So by making some of those policy changes, it's given us the opportunity to do exactly what we're able to do. And that's the way it should be.
You know, you not only were a woman in the military, but you are a woman in IT, and then you have a great deal of experience in cyber. And all three of those areas are really male dominated. And Aileen and I have spent our career in IT as well. And we joke about all the big and little changes, like the fact that for many years, it was always we never had to wait in line for a restroom at any kind of meeting because
that is so true. So if I may, I'd love to tell you a story
absolutely.
On that as well. One of the things that the Chief of Naval Operations tries to do every year or two is he tries to bring together as many of his flag officers, his admirals, as possible for basically an update and strategy meeting. And the first one of those that I went to when I first put on my first star, it was exactly that case. We were in a large venue, and the four of us who needed to use the ladies' room joked that we each could have our own stall designated for the entire day. By the time I left the Navy, the last one of these events I went to, we were standing in line. And to me, that was a really visible mark of progress for us, even if it is a little bit on the humorous side. I still think it's a great one.
Jan, you broke the glass ceiling. Less than 7% of flag officers, and you reached the grade of Rear Admiral, which is a flag officer, are women. Do you think there's an invisible barrier preventing women from reaching the highest level in the profession, regardless of their accomplishments?
Well, you know, what I see is that it takes time to grow an admiral. It absolutely takes time to grow an admiral. And it takes the right experiences, and it takes a consistency in the career as well. What we're seeing now is that enough women have come through the years and the experiences that they actually can be promoted to that rank. So if we were to try and put some mandate to suddenly up the percentage to 30%, that would not be the right answer. The right answer is to make sure that as we're going through our promotion processes and as we're going through our assignment processes, that we're giving the best person for the job, and that we're selecting the right person, the best person for the next pay grade. It really does come down to those assignments, because without the right kinds of assignments and the right kinds of experiences, then I don't think you are equipped with the right tools to be able to lead our great Navy. I'd highlight Michelle Howard, Admiral Michelle Howard, who is our current Vice Chief of Naval Operations. She is a stunning example of someone who, when the service academies opened their doors to women, got in there in the second tranche. She was a 1981 graduate. And she did all the right things. She had the opportunity to take on the right assignments. And as a result, she has been selected for the highest grade in the Navy. And she is serving in an extraordinarily influential position, not only for the Navy, but for the entire department and for the national security agenda.
You brought up pay grades.
Yes.
And I recently read a report out by OMB that says that women in the federal government don't have as large of a pay gap in grade as women in similar jobs as her male counterparts in public sector and private sector. I'm sorry. Women are in private sector are paid less than men in every industry. The report shows it's on average, it's 78 cents per dollar. But in some of the fields you come from, like cybersecurity, it's more like 60 something. So can you explain why? Can you help us with that? Do you have any perspectives as to what the challenge is there, and maybe some insight as to what you believe we could do to change that?
I think that at least within the Department of Defense, which is my experience, there is a true value put on the person who can deliver. And we also have the advantage of, you know, if the federal government is setting the policies on how you go through fair promotion and selection, that maybe we're set up to follow those rules more closely. And then you also have the system where your pay is determined by your pay grade or your GS level, as opposed to some arbitrary assignment from an HR counsel within an organization. So I think those things help keep the pay equitable for positions. I think the fact that there is such a value on performance that helps the right person get selected into those positions in the first place. And I think that may have been heightened, at least for the department, over the last 5 to 10 years, because the budget cuts have put so much pressure on the numbers of people that we can have in our employ that leadership absolutely wants the very best performers. And so when that best performer is a woman, she's going to get the position and she's going to get that pay.
Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor of National Defense University. So Jan, as I just mentioned, in your current role, you are the Chancellor at NDU. Tell us a little bit about NDU and its mission.
Well, National Defense University is a unique institution. It is the premier institution to provide professional military education in a joint environment to our up-and-coming senior officers and civilians. It also has a great stake in the interagency. We have lots of students that come to us from across the whole of government, and even some that come to us from private sector. The reason we do that is because we need this experience for our up-and-coming senior leaders to know how to work in that interagency, to know how to work with the private sector so that we can achieve our national security goals. The college that I lead is the Information Resources Management College, and we specifically look at the preparation and education of both senior leaders and senior advisors so that they are able to develop cyberspace strategies and information strategies so that they can leverage information technology and so that we can fight that information fight and that cyber fight effectively.
Jan, as an educator, do you think America is beginning to have a high-tech human resource challenge, or maybe even as a national security issue?
I believe that is a national security issue, Aileen. There is an increasing dependence on technologies for us to accomplish our goals, whether it be in defense or in our economics. And without the demographic of smart kids who understand these technologies, we won't have a workforce in the future. I know that the Navy, the Department of Defense, is very concerned about having the kinds of folks ready to enter military service in the future. So it is a national security concern.
I mean, the landscape is really changing. The Pentagon just received additional funding to fight ISIS online with weapons like social media. What can we do to help women and minority in particular into these STEM programs? Because those numbers are actually going down for the hardcore sciences. Do you have any insight from that perspective?
The only thing that I can offer on that is that we need to focus on those teachers who are teaching in the grade schools. I think that's the source. Because when we have women or men who are teaching who imply that math or hard science isn't suitable for young girls, those girls learn those lessons. If we don't have them by the time they're in third or fourth grade, feeling confident in these areas and believing that it's an area that is suitable for them, that they can achieve in it, then we've lost them. Now, for them to know that they can achieve in that area, they also need to have the role models out there. So we need to be doing a good job of making sure that at that age, they see women and men who are having fun, exciting careers that bring them success and joy, so that they'll want to aspire to be in those positions.
Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor at National Defense University. Coming up, we'll ask Jan about networking and mentorship. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor, National Defense University.
So, Jan, you've been a proponent of mentoring. Tell us why mentoring is important to you.
Mentoring is important to me for a number of reasons. Not only do I think we have real responsibilities to build the future by reaching out and helping younger folks and junior folks see what their possibilities are, we also get a lot back when we mentor. I can't tell you how much I have learned from the junior folks that I've worked with. And in my field, in cyberspace, in information technology, where the field is constantly changing, it is probably even more important. The folks who are unwilling to set their pride aside and recognize that the guy or gal who works for them may be a lot smarter in this area than they are, they're fooling themselves. So I rely on those mentor-mentee relationships to get a lot out of it myself. And I just find that it gives me a reason for continuing my service. So I think I get more out of it than they do.
And how about if you look back on your career, did you have mentors that played that role? I know we talked about Grace Hopper, and she was more of an inspiration, right? Did you have people who were mentors to you and help and advised you along the way?
Gigi, that's a great point. I think if we try and think of mentors only as those folks who lead you by the nose down a path that will let you reach success, then we're missing the point that there are so many different kinds of mentors. So there are inspirational mentors like Grace Hopper was for me. There are mentors who challenge you to take on new opportunities or new obstacles. And I've certainly had a few of those in the form of commanding officers or career managers who told me you're going to take these orders whether you like them or not. There are mentors in the moment, I like to call them, where you can have an instance of mentoring or to be mentored. It doesn't have to be the long-term, time-intensive relationship. And then there are those mentoring relationships where you link with someone, you connect with someone, and you help them figure out what their way is, what their path is, and you get the reward of seeing them succeed. So for me, I've had all of those kinds of mentors. And I have to say that probably the most influential mentors that I've had included women like Nancy Brown and Betsy Height, also Navy women admirals in this career field, who challenged me and who encouraged me and gave me the confidence to stick with it when I literally had a letter written to get out of the Navy. So I give them a lot of credit, and I hope that maybe I can be credited by others someday that I've given them the same kind of inspiration and push.
Is there some piece of advice that you find yourself giving to young people that you come across and mentor over and over again, something maybe that a piece of advice that may have been given to you or that you discovered on your own that you find yourself relying on?
The biggest advice that I give to folks is figure out what your own priorities are. I see so many young people wrestling with career decisions, and if they can sit down and actually work out what things in their life, not just their career, are in fact the most important things to them, it will usually help them crystallize what their objectives need to be. And then once they do that, I tell them, use that objective as the frame for all of your decision making. And it's remarkable how small decisions will add up to success in the long run if you had an objective in the first place.
I have a child that could use you as a mentor. Speaking of mentors, as when I was doing the research, Jan, on you, I came across a presentation that actually cited Grace Hopper and then cited you as being the most important mentor to this young woman, woman in the IT. So I think you have been successful.
Oh, my gosh. That's really nice to hear.
I will send you the link. The other side of growing your career here in Washington, D.C. is networking. It really has proven key to being successful, especially on the government perspective. Do you have any insight of how a listener out there could better network and grow a support system out there?
The best advice there is that you just have to get yourself out there and do it. So you'll hear people tell you to join organizations that are in your business. So for me, for instance, the Armed Forces Communications and Electronics Association, Women in Technology, Women in Defense, there are a number of organizations out there. But it doesn't help if you join them and then don't go participate. Volunteer to help them put on events. That'll give you backstage access to the keynote speakers and the folks that they bring in for those events. Volunteer to be on a panel yourself. Challenge yourself and step beyond what you think you are capable of doing. You know, women have a tendency not to go for jobs or run for office or try and take on challenges unless they feel that they have 100% of the qualifications down. Men don't do that. Generalizing here. Men will say, hey, there are 5 criteria and I meet one of them, I'm going to apply. Women have got to step up and realize that they need to do that too. Don't play it safe. Take the risks and go out there and get yourself involved. That's how you'll build your network. And that's the advice I would have given me when I was younger, because boy, I did not do that.
I always, when I'm talking to a mentee, I always use the analogy, again, generalizing, that, you know, in the locker room, in a men's locker room, of course, I haven't hung out there, but from what I understand, there is more bragging of success there than what I've seen or even ever heard in the ladies' locker room. So you have to advocate for yourself. Also, during these events, you can find mentors that aren't necessarily where you work.
That's exactly right. And that's very helpful, too. They can give you a clean perspective.
Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor, National Defense University. Jan, I'm going to change gears a little bit here. In doing research for the interview, I found an article that you wrote that was called Before Cyber Disaster Strikes, Developing a Cyber Response Plan. So can you tell us a little bit about the article and why you wrote it?
So I will tell you, first, I've got to give credit to the co-author there, Professor George Trawick, who is one of our professors at the college. And we wrote that for Brink Magazine because they asked us to. That was the instigation of the article. But it's not an area that we hadn't been putting a lot of thought into and that we hadn't been trying to get the word out on already. And that is the aspect that organizations need to realize, that the question of a cyber incident is not an if, it is a when. And frankly, it probably has already happened. So if you have not already thought through and kind of wargamed how you would respond in an incident, how you're going to communicate to your stakeholders, whether it be for a commercial industry where you have shareholders, or whether it be in the government sector where your key stakeholders are citizens, you need to know how you're going to get the message out about what happened, what you're doing about it, how you are coping with it to make sure that their information is as safe and secure as you possibly can make it, and doing that entire postmortem to figure out how to prevent it from happening again. It's a really important lesson for any organization, frankly, for individuals as well. If you haven't thought about what you're going to do when your Facebook account or your Gmail account is hacked, you should probably think about that now so that if it happens, when it happens, you can respond immediately instead of fumbling about.
And I think that shift in mindset from if it happens to when is something that I've noticed in the last probably 2 or 3 years that people are starting to realize. And it's more than just a technological response, right? I mean, you mentioned getting the word out, letting people know. So for organizations, it's really not just about what the IT team is doing. it's really involves HR and the communication staff and a lot of other groups too.
You're exactly right. The bedrock of this is really trust and relationships. And that is not a technical question.
Jan, there are so many jobs open right now in the area of cybersecurity. What advice would you have for a young person out there wanting to get started in this field?
Education is so important here. It's important for a number of reasons. First, if you don't have the basic understanding of how computers and networks actually work, you're not going to be as effective. You can't just think that you're going to come in and just use tools to do your job if you don't understand the foundational pieces. So that kind of gets back to the question we talked about STEM. So that education piece is part of it. The other reason it's important is because companies need to have some kind of a metric to use when they select people for positions. And the one that they tend to use is whether or not you can show on your resume that you have the right kinds of certifications and the right kinds of education to show that at least there's an indicator you could do the job. The other piece is networking. Coming back to that question again, getting out there and talking to people and getting your name known.
What about internships? Are you aware of any internships or on-the-job training that might be available to somebody who wants to switch careers?
Actually, internships are a great way to go about it. Most of them have a requirement that you're involved in some kind of a cybersecurity education program, though. So it's a kind of a two-prong approach. If you get into a cybersecurity education program, then there's a high likelihood that you can find a good internship.
Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor, National Defense University. Coming up, we'll ask Jan about what she likes to do when she's not working. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor, National Defense University.
So, Jan, I know we're going to talk about hobbies and things you like to do, but before we get there, you've had such a successful career, and you've got a family, and with many of the women that we talk to about all the competing priorities, they've had to make a hard decision or face a tough choice, and that might have sent them in a different direction that they had originally planned for their career, or may just be a little bump in the road. Have you had things like that happen in your career?
Well, I have. I think where it resonates the strongest is in my relationship with my children, because there were many times in my career when, although they have always been my number one priority, they haven't necessarily been the number one urgency. And making sure that they understood the difference between those two concepts was really, really important to us maintaining our relationship and making them understand why I do what I do and why I did what I did. I know that it hurt for them not to have their mother present for birthdays, for Christmases, for things like that, whether I was, you know, deployed in the Persian Gulf or in Baghdad. That's hard when your mom's not there. It was really critical that they understood that the reasons that I was doing what I was doing, and they absolutely knew they were loved, even if I wasn't present. Having the support of an incredible husband was one of the critical success factors to this. I mean, he was always there.
You know, it's funny. I always say when I talk to younger women who have either are contemplating having children or have small children, that I wish that I could give them the gift of perspective, because whether you were in the military and were deployed, or whether you were working in maybe private industry, and as Aileen and I did, and, you know, just had conferences or long hours or business meetings that would take you away, I think those things cause moms a tremendous amount of concern and guilt at the time. And so it's nice to, I think, hear from somebody who's got grown kids and has a great relationship with them now to know that it all turns out okay.
It definitely does. So knowing the difference between urgencies and priorities and knowing that you're loved, those are the really key things.
That's really great advice.
You mentioned you were forward deployed in Baghdad. We had the honor a couple of shows ago to be able to interview some very brave doctors who were deployed in Afghanistan. And we asked them if they had any advice for parents that are forward deployed. How do they keep in touch? How do they keep up with their kids? I know your son is forward deployed right now, correct?
He is. That's right.
So is there any pearls of wisdom?
I will just say it is so much easier now. The fact that we have email and Skype and all of the other means to reach back and talk to our families is tremendous. I will say, though, that the thing that is probably most important while you're gone is to be consistent. If you know that you're only going to be able to do it once a week, that's okay as long as you do it every week. Don't promise one thing and deliver another. For me, I was usually able to get something off every other day or so. So that constant feed, if they know that they are in your thoughts, that's what cements the relationship.
And that goes for kids deployed back to their parents too, right?
That's right. I have a son who may not be doing that so well, but that's all right.
I understand that you've got a lot of hobbies. I have a farm and you raise animals, and that is connected with your other hobbies. So, Jan, tell us a little bit about what you like to do when you're not working.
Well, when I am not working, I consider myself to be something of a fiber artist. And my passion for working with fiber, working with yarn, knitting, and sewing led us to a decision that the farm that we have would have fiber animals on it. So we have alpaca and we have fin sheep, and it is a little more than a hobby. It is actually a legitimate small business. Last year, we were almost profitable, so we're getting there. Our business plan is tracking, and we just find it so rejuvenating to be able to be out in nature, be working with the animals. You know, the animals are awesome because they have no preconceived conceptions about you. They respond to what you do for them, and they're a real acid test to whether or not you are doing the right things, because either they're healthy and they're thriving, or they're not. And so it's a great challenge for us to take on, and we are loving every minute of it.
And so you actually take the wool from these alpacas, and then it finds its way into sweaters and other knit goods?
It's true. It's true. I don't do all of the processing of the fiber myself. We take our annual clip, which is what we call the results of the shearings. And I use a small mill that's up near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, to convert it into yarn and roving for hand spinners. And I sell some of it and I use some of it. And someday when I am no longer employed by the federal government, we will put even more effort into it and try and grow it into a medium-sized business. Part of our objective is to actually be able to provide some work opportunities for veterans who are challenged by disabilities.
And one of the aspects of this vocation or avocation that you have is that you have a blog and a podcast, I believe, with your sister. How did that come about?
Well, she and I have hand in hand taken on the craft world since we were tiny kids. And so it makes total sense that our crafting journey continues together. About 5 or 6 years ago, we established the blog because we wanted to share with the world the things that we were doing and the ideas that we had in the area of knitwear design and in just aspects of our life, because, you know, we like to think we're a little bit interesting. And from that, it grew the idea of having a podcast. And the podcast, we've really enjoyed it. It's brought us closer together. It has connected us with many fiber artists out there, and we've really enjoyed to get to know them. And it's opened up new opportunities for us.
Today, our guest is retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor of National Defense University. Jan, I've really enjoyed talking with you today. And before we close the show, I have to ask you one important question. You know, if you were to go back to Jan as she was starting her career, what pieces of advice would you give her to help her achieve this incredible results you have had in your lifetime?
The one thing I wish I had done more of as a young woman was the networking. I made a little mention of that earlier. And for some reason, I don't think I thought I had something to offer to the networking relationship. And so maybe that's why I held back. I wish I hadn't done that. But it's really those connections, those relationships that we build with people that open doors and that sustain us throughout our careers. And if I could tell young Jan to start doing that sooner, that's what I would tell her.
And it's, you know, I would have to say I share that same thing. And, you know, back in the 80s, we exchanged business cards, right? But today, when you meet somebody, all you have to do is link into them and then maintain an update, you know, put something on your calendar. But maintaining and managing that network is invaluable.
Absolutely.
Today, our guest has been retired Rear Admiral Jan Hamby, Chancellor, National Defense University. Aileen and I are founders of Accelerated Government Strategies. You can learn more about AGS and the work we can do to help accelerate your business plans for public sector at excelgovstrat.com. I'm Gigi Shum.
I'm Aileen Black. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Women of Washington with Aileen Black and Gigi Shum on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Women of Washington on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.